Welcome to Musically and Technically Speaking, a podcast where music and technology intersect, hosted by Brenda Minch and Carol Broves.
Today, Carol and I will be discussing, are you a musician or an educator first? Between being a music educator, that is an educator who likes music, or being a musician who happens to be an educator. And we're kind of been discussing this the last couple of conversations that we've had privately about what the difference between those two are. So, Carol, you want to talk about that a little bit? What's your opinions here?
Well, I think the most successful music teachers are people that really feel that they are teacher first. They see themselves as a calling to teaching, and music just happens to be their vehicle. And, you know, I know one of my good friends, Mary Bortz, is an art teacher, and we had a discussion about this, and she always loved to teach. I mean, and like I said, her calling was teaching, and art was her vehicle. And I think some of the teachers that are frustrated are the ones that are the performers. And not that that's bad, it's just that been so focused on themselves, it's hard to all of a sudden be focused on yourselves for almost 15 years and then go into a classroom when you have to be focused on other people because you still want to be the star. So right. I think that's very difficult for someone who's a performer who then is thrown into the classroom and now has to focus on all those, you know, 25 little faces looking up at you who aren't in love with music or sort of in love with music, or the one that just loves music. And, you know, you got the whole, you know, we don't have the luxury of having, you know, having the same type student. We are always in diversity.
Right. Mode. Well, and especially when you're serving the general, at the elementary levels, where you're serving the general population, and it's not a class you get to choose to be in or not be in.
No, and usually, I mean, everyone else either has people helping out. You don't have any help. I mean, and usually, too, it's the first class that they put any of the kids that have to, you know, be mainstreamed in.
Right.
They go to the music class first.
They don't go anywhere else and maybe for the rest of the school day. They might go to PE, but they don't go to social studies or reading any of the other classes with their classmates. But they come to PE. They might come to PE, and they definitely probably come to music.
Yeah, the first one's music. Put them in music because it is a collaborative event. It's a place where students can actually feel that they can be successful.
So you were saying that you think that, in general, that there are some weaknesses in that particular teacher, the teacher who comes into the profession of music education, loving music first and teaching second, that some of their weaknesses are that maybe they don't have an innate ability to understand how to help the student first have a love of the subject area, and then maybe, I don't know, what other issues you think might happen?
Well, I think it's just part of our profession. I know that I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, it goes from how many hours you have to practice. I mean, you know, piano and the violinists can practice anywhere from 4 to 5 to 6 hours, whereas the instrumentalists are 2 to 3, and the vocalists are, you know, maybe 1, 1.5. We are by ourselves a lot. We are not interacting. We are focused on practicing. And that is my life. You know, I'm seeing that more as I'm on the sabbatical. I am constantly thinking about practicing. Practicing. When am I going to practice next? What am I going to practice on? It's all centered around me. It's not about me connecting with another student.
Right.
And I see that.
Well, but
you know,
doesn't it eventually, I mean, the point of the practicing, I think, for most people is connecting yourself with the audience. That's why you're practicing, is you'd like to put forth the best possible product, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, but that may be 4 weeks from now. Day to day, you're by yourself.
Right. No, I agree.
And I think that's one of our problems. And when we finally can collaborate, and I've thought a lot, that's a whole other discussion, just between collaboration and cooperation. But when you finally can collaborate with someone, it is such a fabulous thing. And some people have a really hard time with that. You know, just the soloist with, let's say, an accompanist, there's some people that have problems with that. And if they have a problem with that, they're going to have a bigger problem in the classroom. So
true.
I think we need to look at people that really love children and love to teach and share. And we should set, those are the people we should pick out to be basically the general music teachers. I think those are the people, you know, I think our profession right now is exploding right now. And there's a lot of really cool people out there. You know that, Brenda. I mean, some of these general music teachers are just amazing. And that's their, I think that's their mantra. They have the love of teaching and the love of music. And it's not really centered around them.
But you know what I think I noticed in a teacher who comes at this profession, like yourself and myself, who comes at this profession with a love of educating first and letting music be the vehicle to educate, sometimes I think that those people who fall in that group with us maybe don't have such, and you're not going to like this comment, but I'm going to say it anyway. Don't have such a huge attachment to making sure that the central focus of every lesson is something musical and something else.
Guess what? I like that, because part of the whole thing is making a performance, and it may be that we have to deal with something that has nothing to do with music. Because we are in a great field of learning how to work together and make something work. And if it means that we spend the whole time trying to figure out how we should rearrange the room, if it works out that there's something happening in the school day, you know this, and we were just talking about kindergarten, if there's an issue that happens outside the classroom, we are the perfect vehicle. We understand how to work in a group to sit there and discuss the problem. And I take up time all the time. I mean, that's one of the things that happens sometimes. You know, we're not doing music 100% of the time.
Okay. You know,
but I agree with you. See? You didn't think I was going to?
I thought you would take offense to that comment.
No. I mean, I absolutely not. Especially when I taught kindergarten through third grade, if I had a group that was right after recess, what? I mean, there was always some little issue I had to deal with. If you don't deal with what's going on in the child's life, and you pretend that it doesn't exist, you're going to have major problems. I mean, I think True. It's important that we know what's going on in these child's lives.
But don't you think that those of us who come at it this way, from the educator standpoint, music, educator first, music second, like I'm more willing to do a project like the composer project where I'll spend, you know, 8 music classes on it, but 2 of them are going to be me telling the student how to make a voice thread, which doesn't actually have any direct musical bearing. We're going to use VoiceThread as a vehicle to get our musical ideas, you know, onto the net so that your school can interact with us. Right. But we're going to have to spend 2 days of music class figuring that process out. Whereas a teacher who maybe is more focused on the music would not be willing to do a project like that because we just wasted 2 days of music class. Does that make sense?
Yes, I understand that. And the thing is, I think what's really important is that both you and I do this. We always let the kids know the big picture.
Right.
And once we let them know the big picture, you were probably, you know, I know you. You told them the whole project and what we're going to do. And so they totally bought into those 2 days of VoiceThread because they knew what the payoff was going to be. I always say the big picture, and yeah, I mean, the first time I do Sibelius, that note, you know, notation, it's almost a 35-minute where the kid doesn't get to do anything but maybe 2 clicks, and it's, oh man, it's difficult for me, and it's difficult for the child, and really, we're doing no music. We're doing 100% tech, but that pays off dividends because on the flip side of that is there's days where the kids just fly, and you don't have to spend the time. You spent the time going over very laboriously about how to do everything, and now the kids just fly. And I think you bought into that. You understand going over those 2 days gives you just major days to really have the kids play and be creative. And you have to give that basis, and you're gonna have times where it is boring or trying to get through it. But the kids understand it because it's the big picture. They see, you know, the flip side of it, and you've been teaching long enough that the word on the street is, this is gonna be really cool because we're doing something really new.
Right. Right.
You know, your kids know that. So, I mean, I see that with my kids when I say, okay, this is going to be, I even say it's going to be hard, but you know what? We get through this, we're going to sail fast.
Right.
And I have left brain day and right brain day, you know, left brain day where they have to all click with me and then right brain they can fly. And so they buy into that. I mean, that they have to go through this slowly so they understand. So like I said, sometimes I do get slammed that I don't do enough 100% music, But my students still, we all sing the concerts. We do more shows than any other school in the area, and we do more tech projects. So I think you have to look at bottom line. I think you're the same way. Your stuff that your kids post is beyond anyone around.
Right.
And so.
But I think, I personally, I guess I don't really like to say that because my program is this or your program is that doesn't mean necessarily that it's better or worse. Because
No.
I am straddling a little bit. You know, when I did the choral program at the middle school all the years previous to this, it was what I would say almost 95% performance based. I mean, we were working on, you know, singing art songs and I was even, shock and amazement, the teacher, we didn't sing Disney, and we didn't sing pop, and we didn't sing, if they knew the song from off the radio, we didn't do it in my chorus. So, I guess, you know, I do see the value in putting together a choral program that's heavily performance-based, because the kids enjoy that too. But it's different way of teaching, and it requires a different set of investments for the student and the teacher, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is purpose.
And knowing what you're doing. And you know what? If you're going to be the choral teacher that's going to run a performance group that's singing art songs in sixth grade, then be that teacher. You know what I mean?
Right.
Invest in it. Be that and be okay with it. But then don't come to me in my elementary classroom and say, hey, listen, you should be having your kids, you know, talking about choral diction or whatever. Because you know what? That's not my job. If you want to run that course, then you teach the kids that. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But don't expect me as a person who's teaching underneath you to, like, do all of that head work for you so you can just go in and, you know, wave your arms and have a good time and not have to work very hard.
I think you have brought up just a fabulous thing. I mean, I've had a lot of different people in the K-3 building over at my school, and I have never, ever said to them, do this and that and this. You always teach to your strengths. And if your strength happens to be a recorder, then you make sure your kids are the best recorder players. If your strength is singing art songs, then that's what you do. You sing art songs. You teach to your strength because there's so much out there. There's not enough time in the day to do everything.
Right.
There's no way that we can't 2 days a week teach everything and be a 100% program. We can't do it. So you teach to your strengths, and your kids will be better for it. If you immediately don't teach to your strengths, you're not authentic, and it really, the kids can sense this. They can sense you're going through the motions of, oh, gee, you know, she doesn't really like this. Well, why are we doing this? And, you know, so I think that's teaching to your strengths is our biggest thing.
Yeah, and I think that goes right into, you know, making sure you're passionate about your teaching. And then you're right back to where we started from. Are you an educator first or a musician first? Whatever it is, whatever you're passionate about, that needs to be where you step off from for your teaching.
Right, I agree totally.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information on any of the topics we discussed, all the links are on the blog.